This is Ryan Nilsson sitting with Bert Perry in the National Farm Worker Ministry office in Deland, Florida. It's about 10:30 a.m. on August the 18th, and let's get started. So how did you first get involved with the National Farm Worker Ministry, Bert?
I first got involved. Do you want the real story or you want the public version?
Whichever you'd like to tell. But.
Well, I first got involved because my husband and I came back to Florida when he got out of the service after Vietnam. And we had a little kid, and so we went to our home church in Melbourne, United Church of Christ. And they didn't have a Sunday school, so I thought, well, either I go to another church, but I like our home church and all our friends and family are there. So we'd start a Sunday school. So I started Sunday school with my 18-month-old non-talking, non-reading child and realized that I didn't like children. So I was misplaced. And a friend of mine, who is now retired in Oregon, said, I know what you should do. He was on the staff of the United Church of Christ then. He said, I know what you should do. So he took me to then United Farm Workers Organizing Committee meeting. That was before they had a union here in Florida. And I met Cesar Chavez there. And we talked for about 45 minutes or an hour. And I've been here ever since. So my friend did a good reading and knowing that. And it got me away from children.
Was that the public version or the real version?
That's the real version.
Okay.
The meeting Cesar Chavez part is the public version. I don't tell everybody that I dislike children. But.
Okay, nice. So you first heard about it from your friend. And why did you, what were your motivations to get involved other than not liking children?
Oh. Well, when I went to the organizing meeting in Avon Park, Florida, for the UFW, and Cesar spoke, and then afterwards, since he knew our conference minister, that my friend, he arranged for me to just sit and chat with them. And I was sort of looking for something that my being growing up in and being part of the United Church of Christ, has, you know, we're very social justice-oriented people. And so I was sort of looking for something to do within my local church and within the broader church and the global church, that where I could use the skills and use the interest that I had learned in the UCC. And this seemed to me, living in Florida and having lived in Florida for many, many years and knowing nothing about agriculture except that you see postcards with a truck full of oranges on it that seem to appear from nowhere or they just come from the supermarket, that it really fascinated me hearing him talk about the lives of farm workers. And at that time there were most of the workers that I met 30 years ago or however many years ago it is now were African American and white. They were black and white. There were very few Hispanic speaking workers in Florida at the time that the UFW started organizing. So it's been, you know, there's been a big shift in the population of workers, but each time a new group of workers is brought in for the purpose of keeping wages low, I mean, that's the only reason, right? It just fascinates me from that original talk with Cesar how he could see that all coming. And I just thought he was really, it would be worth my time, my church's time, my, you know, to care for people that lived with us that we never saw.
Can you talk about that shift more in the population?
In the population? Well, according to a friend of mine, labor economist, whom I met not too long after that meeting with Cesar, every 20 years or so, and it's shortened up its time a little bit, but every 20 years or so as people began to realize they should have better working conditions or, you know, and people begin to group together or organize, the agribusiness tends to replace those people with people who are less trouble. And when in Florida, we were sort of late in the civil rights movement. You know, we didn't like get it for quite a few years after the rest of the country. And so in the mid-70s, when the African-American workers began to say, you know, we don't have to be treated like this, and also in the civil rights movement, many of them left the fields and went into the urban areas where things were happening, the reaction from agribusiness was, rather than raise the wages or improve the working conditions, just find somebody that would work cheaper. So it was then people mostly from Mexico and parts of Central America. And in some cases, we had a lot of Haitian and Jamaican workers here in Florida, and sugarcane, and in the southeast part of Florida, because they would come and work cheaper. And they didn't have, as immigrants, they didn't have the rights, supposedly, that, you know, Americans have. And so that happened. And then, you know, when the UFW started organizing here in Florida, it was about the same time that other immigrants were brought in to replace the African Americans. And because Caesar was very good at integrating the workforce here in Florida, much more so than in California, because we already had people shifting populations. And so the UFW then here was made up of African Americans, Jamaicans, Haitians, some Caucasians, and people beginning to come from Mexico and Central America. And when that started happening, then a lot of the agribusiness, especially in South Florida, stopped hiring Mexicans and started bringing in Guatemalans and people from Costa Rica and Belize. And, you know, they just keep replacing populations as soon as a group realizes that they need to be less exploited,
so
they get replaced.
Where are we now in Florida with those cycles of people, of workers coming in and it taking a while for them to realize that they can ask for, demand more?
Well, I think now mostly the agriculture worker population is Hispanic, Latino, from some various countries, but a lot, I mean, here in this county, we do ferns. We grow ferns, you know, you put in flower things. And many of those people are Mexican. There's also a lot of Guatemalans, and the sort of the new thing is now there's a lot of, well, not a lot yet, but there are people from the Philippines, and there are some Laotians, and the population is changing slightly, but predominantly here is still Hispanic, and I think most of agriculture is various Central and South American countries. Because those are the people who are coming, who are immigrating here, documented or not. Those are the people that we're getting. And they're desperate for work, and they work in agriculture.
Cool. Not cool, but can we revisit? You said you grew up in the UCC in a pretty social justice-oriented context. Can you talk more about how your beliefs and values have impacted your work with the National Farm Worker Ministry?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the way to do that. I guess the values that I got, or the interest in people who were stressed, you know, not necessarily exploited, literally, but who were stressed, was what happened to my own family when I was young. And at, you know, one point we were living in Connecticut. We were displaced from a home. We were homeless, basically. And it was the local church that picked us up. And that would happen to be a congregational church, which is part of the United Church of Christ now. And that made a big impression on me. So, you know, I figured we stayed in the United Church of Christ after that. My father's family was Mormon and my mother's family was Catholic. But after that, we stayed with the Congregational Church. And seeing that kind of activity happen over and over and over again, it made sense to me to put my energies somewhere to sort of pass that. You know, if somebody does something good for you, you do something for somebody else if you can. And so that kind of, and then once I, you know, met the United Farm Workers and got interested in that issue, especially since I really like to eat. And it seems like if you eat, you should have concerns about agriculture, both farmers and workers. So the UCC at all our meetings, and also the United Church of Christ was a main early sponsor, founder, whatever, of the National Farm Worker Ministry. And at that time, the director of the National Farm Worker Ministry in Florida was a United Church of Christ pastor. So I met him through the UCC also, as well as with my conference minister friend that introduced me both to the ministry and to the workers. So it all just kind of fit together. So I volunteered for a year in 1978. And here I am.
So. Can you tell a story or a few stories about your early involvement and maybe how mm-hmm. how your involvement has changed since that first period as a volunteer?
Yeah, I guess the major one, I know in the papers that you sent, or the questions you sent, or some sort of events, or, you know, that question basically, was at the time when I met farm workers in the National Farm Worker Ministry, my husband worked for Winn-Dixie, which is a grocery store, was then the major grocery store in Florida. And he was a store manager. And when we moved to DeLand so he could manage a store here, I became really active, you know, within the UCC churches here and also in the sort of the greater community, the broader community, because there are a lot of workers, farm workers here. And at that same time, the Farm Labor Organizing Committee had a state person here whose name was Fernando Cuevas, and I met him through the farm worker stuff, you know, actions and activities, and we became good friends. And I decided it'd be a good idea to invite him to our local UCC church to talk about farm workers and agriculture. So I did that, and the newspaper, and in that talk, we also talked about the social responsibility of corporations, you know, the compliance, I think was the word I might have used, of grocery stores, you know, in wanting cheap stuff, so they did not object to what was happening in their supply chain. And in that, the newspaper was there, actually the Beacon, this newspaper, and they did an article with a picture and everything, and on a Sunday. And the next, on Monday, the supervisor came to my husband's grocery store and said they had a report of him stealing $60,000 worth of groceries, which was in our garage, probably. So all this stuff happened, and it ended up that he lost his job, he lost his career, and people inside the system told us right away it's because of the comments I made about the agribusiness industry and about the need for unionization among farm workers. And Winn-Dixie was and still is very, very, very anti-union, as many of the Old South companies are. And so he basically lost his job. So that was a major event in our lives. But it did teach me something. The UCC in our statement of faith says there's a cost and joy to discipleship. And there was a big cost, but at the same time, we had a really lot of fun because grocery store managers work 80 hours a week, and all of a sudden he had no job, so he was home with me and my two little kids. So we had a lot of fun, and it was after that I joined the staff of the National Farm Worker Ministry, because I wouldn't do it before because I feared it might get us in trouble. But it got us in trouble anyway. So, you know, and he was out of work for a couple of years, and it was not easy. He got blacklisted in the Florida grocery industry. So it was an adventure, to say the least. but it was also pretty remarkable in how the workers reacted, how, you know, it was pretty cool, actually. So the first thing he did after he lost his job because of my relationship with, it was more with the unionization thing than it was with farm workers themselves. It was, I mean, if I just did charity work, that would have been fine. But because we were advocating for unions in Florida, a right-to-work state, and it was just about that time that Florida became a right-to-work state in reaction to farm workers trying to unionize in Florida. Our legislature voted, made us a right-to-work state. And it was, that was in direct. And all that stuff was happening while I was doing my little personal journey, and with no, you know, I had no idea that those, that was that big a deal. But we found out. And so it was an adventure, I would say. And so then I went to work for the National Farm Worker Ministry, and that's on staff a few years later, and so then, you know, here I am.
So that was all in your first few years?
Yeah.
You said 78?
Yeah, that's when I was a volunteer. And then the actual article came out probably like 83, I guess, 82, something like that. I can't remember what the year was. I have it stashed around here somewhere. And then after that, I went on staff, quote, paid $10 a week in grocery money on staff for the ministry. But it was, and I think many of us who are part of the early days of the farm worker movement have very similar stories to ours. Of course, the first thing my husband did after this happened, there was a board meeting for the Florida Farm Worker Ministry, and the first thing he did was go be part of it, wanting to figure out exactly what was what happened. So it was good. We had a court case, which we lost, I think. And a whole bunch of legal things after that Winn-Dixie event. And, you know, it's one of those sort of blessings in disguise. He got out of the retail grocery business, which is a difficult profession anyway. So that's how we got here. And then he's always been very supportive, obviously, and still is. Does a lot of stuff with us.
So you said that when that was happening and early on, you didn't really, you were just figuring out the larger context,
yeah,
of what it all meant. Over the years, kind of looking back at that, and as you've learned more about the agricultural system here and the farm worker movement, the work of the National Farm Worker Ministry, how has your perspective of that experience changed?
I think it was a much more, I mean, it was a serious event to me personally and my family, because, you know, I've been a store manager for 10 years and all of a sudden you don't have a job. And at that time, the store managers of these small towns had some of the best jobs in the community. So that was a big deal. But I think I didn't realize how far-reaching the web in agribusiness in any state probably, but in Florida in particular, how significant those political, you know, and anti-union forces are. And I also realized that it is part of the, and it still is. I don't see it being much different. It's more subtle than it was then. But even then, when it happened, all our friends said, well, you know what happened. It has nothing to do with the performance of the store, the, you know, any of that stuff. It's, you know, it's her. It's what she does. And it's that whole question of control by companies, by corporations. In a state like Florida, which is an agricultural state, I mean, we have other things now, tourism and, you know, some other industries, space and that kind of stuff. But it's still basically an agriculture state. And if you look at our systems in this state, from the legislature, from the governor on down, it's very anti-worker. It's very anti-farm worker. We had one governor who was in favor of labor relations, you know, similar to California Labor Relations Act, and he just got buried. So, and it hasn't changed that much, but it is more subtle. And with all the other organizations and with all the struggle, it's still very, very difficult for workers, farm workers, to organize. The best example, probably, I mean, the UFW has no presence here anymore. The Farm Labor Organizing Committee has no presence here anymore, even though the workers come back from North Carolina and, you know, work here in the winter. But as far as an organization, they all kind of gave up because they don't have the... not because they didn't think it was important. I think they just don't have the resources to... You know, UFW spends its efforts in California. It's their home base. You know, FLOC's home base is North Carolina. And here, we have a couple organizations. The Coalition of Immokalee Workers, who much of agriculture thinks is a union, but it's not. It's a community organization. And they have the same kinds of attitudes toward the coalition that they had toward the UFW and toward FLOC, that it's just, you know, empowerment of workers is not on the political or social parameters or radar for workers. And especially now with our current political makeup, it's even more difficult.
What do you think are the historical roots of that sentiment? You're describing Florida as a kind of particularly anti-worker state, and from all the systems.
Well, I mean, we're a southern state. We're a state that built and survived on slavery for all those years. And one of our congressmen, and I don't remember who it was now, I'd have to look it up, but it was back in... around the time that I first started, when they were talking about agriculture and his comment was, well, we don't own slaves anymore, now we just rent them for a season. And that's still basically true. And if you look at the lack of rise in wages, the lack of rights, you know, even though supposedly people, even though it's a right to work state, you have the right of association, you have right. It's just not allowed in certain segments of the population, and agriculture is the biggest one. That it hasn't really... Florida is still pretty backward when it comes to some of the social issues.
How do some of these dynamics in Florida make the work of the National Farm Worker Ministry here unique? As you've mentioned, North Carolina and California, and I know that in your experience you've traveled quite a bit and know the work in other states, but what's distinct and peculiar about, you know, Florida?
You know, I hate to keep saying we're still backward, but we, you know, we still are, and it's part of the whole... sort of anti-organized organization. I mean, you know, we're doing the same public employee things that, you know, any excuse to save, quote, money. And I think it's also, when we first moved to Florida in the 50s, middle, late 50s, Florida was a union state in many, many areas of it. My father and mother both worked for the government. My father worked for a contractor, RCA, and they had a union. And as new companies moved in from other places in the South, that were trying to find cheaper places to be. Florida was, you know, pretty inexpensive then. They brought those Southern anti-union sentiments with them, and I think that was always part of agriculture and became stronger even in agriculture, because many of our senators, representatives, all were come from agriculture. They still do. You know, our several of our governors come from agriculture, have come. So the whole idea that farm workers are people too, or, you know, that they're not slaves that we rent, that just because people work in the dirt, they shouldn't, you know, have to be, quote, dirt poor. It still hasn't yet caught up with other segments.
And how does that affect the specific activities and projects that you both have worked on and are currently working on with the National Farm Worker Ministry here? What are some of the projects you're working on?
Well, in the beginning, the big thing was, you know, support for the United Farm Workers and their right to organize. And that was our main thing in organizing, carrying that message to the churches. Well, now that we don't have any farm worker unions in the state of Florida, a lot of our support goes with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, because they are, quote, acting like a union, even though they're not a union. They're organizing workers, and, you know, they have memberships and things like that. And so we, you know, do that same kind of support, carrying that message to the churches. And in the context of that, also over the years, since we have changed to an immigrant population, many of whom, you know, English is their second or third language, we do, you know, the dynamics have changed as public sentiment towards immigrants has changed, that it's more difficult sometimes to convey the need to protect farm workers because they're not us. And I think that has made, even in churches, going to speak to churches in the last maybe 10 years or so, you know, people will say, well, they're illegal. And you can say, well, no, there are illegals, quote, but not everybody who works in agriculture, you know, is an undocumented worker. Well, people don't see that. All they see is people running across the border, and that's from... But they don't get mad at growers for hiring them, you know, at even cheaper and cheaper wages. They just get mad at the people who are coming here, which is a very different kind of situation with which to deal than, you know, if you were a farm worker and just being badly treated. And in so a lot of ways, it's harder now to support farm workers than it was during those, you know, union organizing days and doing those times. And one of the first things I did when I volunteered with the ministry was go with a bunch of church ladies, mostly, and stand at the edge of a field so that when farm workers wanted to talk to each other, usually about the UFW, wanted to talk to each other at lunch or at some break time, they wouldn't get beat up. And they would be left alone, because we'd be standing there watching the crew leaders, watching what was happening. And as long as we were standing there as white ladies, the workers were protected. And, you know, that was pretty awful, but at least it was very blatant. I mean, you could see it, right? And now the ways to make life difficult for people, especially if they are undocumented, is much more subtle, and the general public doesn't have the same kind of sympathy or empathy with low-wage workers that I think we used to have, not only in agriculture, but anywhere. But it's particularly evident in agriculture, where, you know, they're not us. And I find that, as a church person, very hard to accept. And I think that in the last, you know, 10, 15 years, maybe 10, I don't know how long, but that's been a motivation for me to still be here. Because, you know, as a person who believes, you know, you welcome immigrants, and you know, we forget our history. My grandparents weren't us either. They came over here from Poland and worked hard and were poor, but they weren't, that you could pull yourself up by your bootstraps. But you know, the folks in agriculture don't have boots, so it's hard to do that. So I think there's a real, and I don't know if it's because people in the general public have been frightened, and I think that's a lot of it, by you know, the political discourse that has been going around in the last 10 years or so. But I think it's for communities, it's very scary. And we have, it makes exploitation of workers easier, because it drives, they're not as willing to say, this happened, or that happened, or we need help for this, or for that. And a lot of the stories we get now from workers, we get when we do things like deliver school kits, or take health kits to people, or you know, those kinds of things where you can, you have to sort of sometimes be covert in your activities, I guess, in order, you know, in order for workers to feel secure in talking to people, they have to be, you have to provide a cover for them, like, here's my I'm a church person, here's my charity. And instead of, you know, I'm a church person, we're here in solidarity with you. Which I find pretty scary, since it's, what, 2011 and a half? And we're supposed to be people who are progressing somehow. And, you know, workers, the pay hasn't risen in 20 years in agriculture, which means, you know, what do we do? What do you do with less money? I don't know. I forget what the last comparison of what today's wages are compared to, you know, worth, real value. So people are struggling more, have less resources, and less energy. You know, we wonder, well, why aren't they organizing now? And a lot of it is financial resources, and I think a lot of it is just they don't have the energy. And there's nobody willing to take on that leadership role at the cost. And a lot of that is because in Florida, and I guess other places too, we are, agriculture has become intentionally an immigrant population. I mean, these growers want immigrants. They work cheaper. They're not going to say anything, which is different than when the workers were us, black or white. At least they were, you know, they had a better social network system to help them. So now that we are discounting people who aren't us so easily, it makes it more difficult.
So when you talked about going into the churches, when you go into churches representing the National Farm Worker Ministry and face a kind of anti-immigrant sentiment or anti-farm worker, anti-union, have you found over the years particularly effective ways of talking about the work of the National Farm Worker Ministry and the farm worker movement to that particular audience, or to other audiences that have been really helpful in helping people see a broader picture, another perspective?
With
all these questions, you can take a minute and think.
Yeah. Well, the best place to go when you talk, if you want to get a message to a church, is go to women. I mean, that's the best place to go, and even there you get those same kind of questions. However, just talking about, you know, do you eat, you know, did you eat today, where'd that food come from, you know, those kind of, those simple sorts of things, And of course, the very best way of talking with churches is when, you know, I'm able to accompany a farm worker to go make those, do those talks. But that doesn't always happen because, you know, most church things meet during the week and people work. So just to speak sort of on behalf or in, you know, in support of workers is, I think it's a little more difficult than it used to be, partly because of the attitude just toward people. I mean, everybody's so, we're not that they have a bad attitude toward people, but everybody now is so protective of themselves and worried about themselves that you know, people have a compassion window of only so much before they can't handle anymore. And when your own family's stressed and you don't have a job and all this, you know, the concern for some others is difficult. But even in that, I think in churches and in other groups, a good place to talk is the ACLU because they understand civil rights and human rights, you know, and that's their whole thing to do. But in churches, you still, I still start with the, you know, the charity thing. And before now, and I didn't used to do this. I used to think, you know, well, they can do their charity somewhere and do it. That's nice. I mean, churches do charity. That's what we do. But now I will sometimes get a church who's interested in something and have them do a charity project, like make school kits or health kits or food bags or something. So that you have to start really back up with sort of kindergarten justice. Is why are we sitting here today making food baskets for people? You know, and it's the same thing that Caesar did, the charity to justice, or he called it service to servanthood, where, you know, you start out with your service and your advocacy and then your solidarity. And now we call it charity to justice, just for different language. But you would think after so many years in a state like Florida, where not only the National Farm Worker Ministry, but there have been other organizations, you know, and the farm workers themselves talking about justice for workers, that we wouldn't still be going back to the, you know, here, you make this, and while you're making this basket, let's talk about why you have to make a basket, why people can't buy their own food. What's wrong with the system that if you work 20 years in agriculture, you still can't buy dinner for your family? If that happened in another, I mean, it does happen more now than it did even 20 years ago, where people are struggling. And Florida, not only in agriculture, is a service industry state. So we have a very low wage, we're a very low wage state for the most part. So people can kind of understand that, but they still believe that people who work hard should be able to sustain their families and send their kids to school. So you kind of have to keep going, you know, sort of back to that question. And then with churches, you can do, and churches like to eat, you know. So when you're doing your potluck dinner, I always ask them, when you go through the line, don't take anything out of the buffet line that's been touched by a farm worker. So they get to the end of the line and they have pretty much an empty plate because the salads, the meats, everything has been touched by agriculture workers. And it's a little annoying sometimes to have to go do those things. But then this is a new, different generation of people than the last 15 years, you know, whether they're new to Florida, even the retired folks who come from other places, from cities mostly, aren't, you know, where the food actually, how it gets to them is not on their radar screen. And I don't think that'll ever change. I mean, we used to say, well, it'll be nice when the ministry, when we can work ourselves out of a job, but I don't see that happening. And I think that's depressing. And I think it's part of the agricultural system that causes that, because every time people begin to organize or community gather or whatever you want to call it, if it's not technically union organizing, anytime they begin to organize in communities, then they just get replaced by people who are easily, more easily exploited. And in Florida, I don't know if you are familiar with the slavery convictions that we've had in Florida over the last decade. And those are African Americans for the most part. They are us. And so we shouldn't be still prosecuting people for slavery in the state of Florida, but we are. And I don't know if we need more voices to tell those stories. I mean, Florida's a pretty big state. There's two of us who work here. Used to be one of me for many, many years. And it's true of most of our states, you know, most of our areas where we work. California is a huge state. There's two people there. So that limits our opportunity for outreach. But I believe that without the National Farm Worker Ministry, we wouldn't have the support for workers in this state that we have now. Even though it seems like it's getting harder resource-wise to do it, that one of the things the Farm Worker NFWM does, I think, is put, because of the relationship with the Bible, Old and New Testament, and Jesus feeding, you know, 5,000 and talking about immigrants and, you know, all this stuff that's not talked about in the justice discussion in lots of churches, is not talked about sort of out of the earth. I mean, there's a certain connection with people who sit in pews when they really think about people who work with the earth. Because they, you know, we all have this, you know, the Bible, everything in it is agriculture related almost, because that's what people did. You know, you either did that or you were king or something, which is sort of like it is now, come to think of it. But if, you know, so people understand human existence when we remember how it was when there was agriculture is what supported kingdoms. So it was important. I mean, to be a farmer was a noble thing. To be a worker in a vineyard was a noble thing, even if they weren't treated that well. I mean, they were still workers. They were probably slaves. But there was something, you know, there was something that was appreciated about people who worked with the earth, and that's not true anymore. So I think to remember and get church people to think about that helps them realize that there's no, not only church people, but, you know, anybody who thinks about history, that there's no way in good conscience or even fair conscience that workers who pick our food and produce our meats and all that stuff, you know, should not be able to buy it for their own families.
So, how have you personally changed or been impacted by your involvement with the ministry over the years, and how you approach other situations in your day-to-day life, just in general?
Well, I think personally, it certainly has made me raise my children differently than I might have raised them had I not been involved in, you know, in this issue. It has also given me a lot of conflict resolution skills that I think within groups that, you know, you learn to be when it's necessary, even though, I may resist it. You have to learn to be a little diplomatic. You have to learn, you know, to listen. And I think I have also developed a I don't know if I'd call an appreciation. Well, maybe I can't think of another better word, but you know, an understanding, appreciation of something for farmers that I didn't have when I first started this work. And a lot of it, that comes from sort of a change in perspective of the workers more than it does of the ministry. You know, because we take our clues from the workers, and I think it started for me, and it probably, I don't know, for other people in other places it might have been different, but for me it started with working with Baldomar Velasquez, working with Flock, when he began to look at the growers, approach the growers publicly, and you know, I don't know what was going on in his head, but when he began to look at agriculture as not such always a conflict, an adversarial relationship, which working with the UFW here in Florida, that's what it had been. It had been growers against workers, which wasn't really getting us anywhere very fast. I mean, it was always a battle, and the rhetoric was pretty confrontational on both sides.
What was the difference in the perspective or approach that Baldomar was?
Yeah, well, Baldomar, from an I met him, I don't know, 25 years ago probably, or more, and he also, I think that was his beginning feelings, because that's how he was treated. His family, you know, it was a very violent, confrontational relationship. But when he began organizing, he started taking a different look at agriculture, which we still have not really, well, somewhat here in Florida. But he looked at it more as the growers sort of being as powerless as the workers on those small farms, mostly family farms. They weren't that small, but family farms. You know, because they were dictated to, even before they planted their crop, how much they plant, how much they get for it, you know, what their capital investment would have to be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And no matter what happened during their season, this is what they were going to get for their crop, period. And so they had no power either in the system. And I think he realized before anybody, pretty much, that was the approach was not to be so adversarial, but to get some of those growers sort of on your side, to say, you know, you do better, we do better. And, you know, so that's when he started those three-way agreements that included the processor. So he put the onus, the responsibility on the processors and the companies like Campbell Soup at the beginning. So when he did that, it changed the dynamic. And I know when he first started, one of the biggest adversarial growers, you know, in Ohio then, I don't know, 10 years later, however many years it was the keynote speaker at the Flock Convention. And that's pretty remarkable to me. But he did change the conversation. Now, that kind of conversation has not really reached Florida, but we have a different situation than, you know, the farms and Ohio, Michigan. But it did also give people some pause to think that it doesn't have to be. And if you look at it from a faith perspective, which is, I think, what changed Baldomar's, also his, the way he was viewing the whole situation, then it makes more sense to, you know, figure out how to make everybody better off than to, you know, fight about the small spoils. Because the growers were really in that much of a detriment as the workers, because they had no say in how they lived and ran their businesses. So that was a big dynamic change, and it was also a change with, I think, the thinking. It changed my thinking. And then when I started looking at things like the agriculture issues, which I was day-to-day involved in, it also made me look at other kinds of things, you know, social justice issues, other also kinds of just day-to-day things, that it's, you know, it's not, quote, black and white, but it's, you know, there are ways. I mean, you can overcompromise, but there is, it doesn't have to always be a us and them conflict situation.
It's encouraging.
Yeah.
So what would you like to say to people who might be interested in getting involved with the National Farm Worker Ministry's work today?
Yeah, I'd like to say a lot of things. What would I like to say? Simplest. I think simplest is that all of us, and since we are a National Farm Worker Ministry, but we have a lot of members who are not, who believe in the justice side of agriculture, in addition to whether or not they are church members. But I would say that in the context of faith, and belonging to a ministry or working with in support of a ministry, that the least of these, if you look at our systems today, are people in agriculture and in the service industry. And I think that if you want to change a system of exploitation, you have to start from the bottom, from the people, the least of these. And in agriculture, of course, those people are the workers. And if you look at it from other kinds of biblical perspectives, you know, there's the immigrant and there's the women and, you know, and just the value of life. And in an industry where people, and it's not only agriculture, we know, there's many more now than there were 20 years ago situations, but in an industry where people are not valued as employees but rather more as equipment, and that has been said, you know, we don't talk to our trucks, why should we talk to our workers, said by a grower in Immokalee. So if you look at that need to be a person of responsibility toward other humans, I don't see how you could avoid supporting agricultural workers. Whether, you know, I would hope you'd do it through the National Farm Worker Ministry. But I don't see how you can live in this country and not support the people who pick our food. I just don't see it. And you can support other people also at the same time, but I think that's a basic opportunity. And because the National Farm Worker Ministry does have, you know, connections, both historical and present connections with workers who are struggling to change the system and their environment and their working conditions, their pay and wages, all that stuff, because the National Farm Worker Ministry does have those connections and has been supporting workers for so long, it makes sense to me that if you're interested in what you eat, you would support the National Farm Worker Ministry. Because it's very difficult, no matter where you live, it's very difficult just to go out and support workers with no connections to those workers. And the National Farm Worker Ministry was, when it changed from just a charity organization to also a justice organization, the purpose of that was to be the bridge to carry the message to the churches, mostly, of the workers who didn't have the resources, money, time, energy to speak for themselves. You know, we just sort of carry, we're the messengers, and that's still true, that we have the message that the workers give us according to what's happening in the local places and on the broader perspective. you know, the global perspective. So I think it's an opportunity to make a large impact with a small number of people. I mean, the ministry's pretty small. When I joined the ministry, we had a staff of 18. Now we have a staff of, what, 6, 7, 8? I forget how many it is now. But, you know, that's a big impact. You can influence and affect a lot of people, not only through the justice work, but, you know, the public policy work. We do a lot of lobbying and stuff like that, and, you know, with our legislators. And it's an easy way for one person to make a big difference. And you get to meet wonderful people. And you get to appreciate what you eat. And I couldn't guarantee it. But I would pretty much think that anybody who interacts with farm workers never looks at the way they eat again. I mean, even if you are not interested in justice, if you're not interested, I don't, you know, most people are, but even if you're not interested in the complexity of agribusiness and all that, once you interact with the person who actually harvests your food and you really talk to that person about their lives, their jobs, all that stuff, you never look at your food the same way again. And I think that's the kind of message that the National Farm Worker Ministry carries to people, and that you can make a little difference. I mean, it's pretty easy when you talk about boycotting things. I mean, the boycotts have worked in agriculture. It takes a long time, but they have worked. And, you know, it's not that big a deal not to eat a grape for a couple of years. But if enough people don't eat a grape, you know, the workers get better jobs. It's just, to me, it's a good way to affect that system and do it out of a strong basis of faith and justice, whichever one is more important to you.
At this point, is there anything else that you want to share, or say, a story or thought?
Let me think here. Should be lots of stories. They just don't want to pop into my head at the moment.
A story that had a particularly transformative experience on you, maybe? Or?
I think in more recent years, and working here in Volusia County with the fern workers, fern pickers, I always thought that women were affected when working in the fields. But I never knew that many. Most of the leadership in, you know, agriculture in the movement, labor movement, have been male, except for Dolores Huerta, but she's an exception. But local leadership, for the most part, has been male. And I think when we started working directly with women who worked in the nurseries here, and to hear their stories about their difficulties working in stoop labor when pregnant, or before pregnancy, or during pregnancy, or after pregnancy, and also the effects that the chemicals, the pesticides, have on their babies, themselves, is really always very distressing to me. And I guess that's another reason I am excited about the women's group that's found, you know, that's forming here in Volusia County, because they're taking on some of those issues. And, you know, the whole pesticide issue is something that Caesar worked on with the grape boycotts years ago. And it's still present, and we're still fighting the effects.
Can you say a short word about the organization that's forming?
It's called AMA. It's the Alliance of Women. and the woman fern worker at sort of she lives up north of here in Seville, a little bitty town. She's actually an interesting person to talk to. But she had a few women friends that they'd get together sort of as a support group, and they'd talk about a variety of things, you know, the children's issues, spousal issues, work issues, and a few people in her living room. And then as the word got out, the group grew and grew, became, you know, a 501c3 thing, and we raised lots of money for it through the United Church of Christ. They funded her to have a salary, small, a stipend more than a salary, to run this group. They bought the discarded school building in Seville. They lease it from the county for a small amount of money. Actually, it's larger, more than I think it should be, but. And so they have a place to meet, and they do not only women's issues, now some men are getting involved. And in the community, it has really changed it. When they first started, most of the husbands were not very in favor of their wives getting together, gossiping, or whatever they thought they were doing. But when they found out how empowering it was, and when, you know, they speak out on the pesticide issues, they speak out on all the issues in the nurseries. When they found that out, then they became interested in it. So it's a very viable organization now. And it has a board and everything. And it's really sort of changed the dynamic of the way that whole small, very closed agriculture community is operating. And I think, you know, most people will never notice that, because you won't see it, but it's really it's community organizing at its best, and with no resources up till recently. And Larissa, who works, you know, with us, has been a big part of empowering them to do the work that they're doing. And it's a little different than stuff the National Farm Worker Ministry usually does, but I think it's important for us to sort of make that transition, because agriculture doesn't act like it used to act. I mean, now there are no big organizing efforts in most places. I mean, North Carolina probably has the biggest one. But there are groups of people wanting to do the community organizing. I mean, that's what the coalition started up. Immokalee Workers started out to be, and now they're, you know, huge dynamic force in Florida agriculture. But there are other groups there that had the potential, even if it's in with their own communities, to really make a difference in the lives of the people there. And I think we as the National Farm Worker Ministry need to be able to look at that. I mean, it's sort of how we started out, particularly in Florida. The UFW was not a huge group. It wasn't even a union in Florida. It was just a group of people organizing. And, you know, the UFW came in to help. So it's that sort of really grassroots organizing that I think we can watch for. And in the places where we have to have staff in those places, it won't happen without, you know, being able to do it. And the Farm Worker Association in Florida is another example of how we've been able to work together in support of, you know, the things, the community organizing kinds of things they want to do. They don't do labor organizing as such, but they do community organizing around a lot of immigration issues, a lot of health and, you know, environmental issues, a lot of pesticide work, those kinds of things, a lot of legislative public policy issues, more so than the other farm worker groups in the state. They all have their own kind of little niche where they operate. And they have an office here in Volusia County. And they started the same, the Farm Worker Association started the same year that I started with the Farm Worker Ministry. So we kind of grew up together. So we do a lot of work with them, and they do very different, you know, work. It's not the traditional labor organizing that we used to support and still support wherever it is. But until, you know, that next big leader comes along to organize people en masse in somewhere, we need to look at the local, the community kinds of organizing that's happening, which I think we're doing in various ways. It's a little different in Florida because we have so many farm worker groups that other states generally have one main group, and we've got a few of them. So without the UFW, we have, you know, not the point organization that we used to, you know, resource. It's, I don't know, it might be better because it has more direct effect on communities. So I think it's pretty positive, but I do think we need to look at, and I know the board meeting is supposed to talk some about, you know, where do we go from here or what happens next, or, and, you know, and Virginia has some really good ideas, I think, from what, you know, little we've been able to talk about. You know, how do we see our mission? Because it's very different than when we started, when our mission statement said, we support the United Farm Workers, or we support farm workers struggling for self-determination, as embodied by the United Farm Workers.
That was in 71?
Yeah, I think so. And then it was, then we sort of added flock, and that was a struggle, and then we sort of, you know, it's alive. So then we just kind of had to, you know, follow the way the workers are organizing.
Seems like an appropriate model of transitioning your mission and approach.
Yeah, I mean, it's really exciting. It is exciting. It's sort of more, I don't know about more. It's going back to sort of our beginnings more when we were really on the ground with people. You know, but when the UFW became, you know, a full-fledged union, you interact with the leaders and, you know, take your cues from there. And it's sort of different than when they were an organizing committee. Not better or worse, it's just different.
Yeah.
Personally, I think it's more fun when you, you know, have the grassroots folks to work with day in and day out. Learn a lot more, and you can see the results a lot more of what you're spending your time and energy on.
So. Good. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Sitting and talking with me today.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you're doing this. I think this is pretty cool.